He's probably the biggest visual artist of the 21st century, and that is some achievement when you've remained totally anonymous. And the work you do is, well, basically graffiti with a stencil. Now, after years without interviews, without public appearances, without a confirmed identity, good old-fashioned dogged journalism has finally put a real name on the artist we all know as Banksy. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. Look, it's not often that I talk about modern art here on the podcast. We're kind of down-to-earth people here on the News Talk Daily HQ. But I do feel confident that most of you will know exactly what I'm going on about today. You've seen the images, the little girl with the heart-shaped red balloon, the guys from Pulp Fiction wielding bananas where their guns should be, the House of Commons filled with chimpanzees, and a recent one that we discussed here on News Talk Daily, the image of a judge in a wig bashing a pro-Palestine demonstrator with his gavel. That one was actually scrubbed from the walls of the Royal Courts of Justice in London within 48 hours. For nearly two decades, the identity of Banksy has been one of the art world's great mysteries. But a new investigation by the Reuters news agency suggests that that mystery may finally have been solved. So who is the artist behind these works that have sold for more than $20 million a piece? And if we now know who Banksy really is, does that actually change anything? Well, I'm joined now by broadcaster and producer Owen Sweeney, a man who knows his way around popular culture. Owen, you're so very welcome to News Talk Daily, and a happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
Same to you, Ciara. Thanks for having me.
I'm hoping by the end of the day there might be a little bit of Banksy-inspired St. Patrick's Day art somewhere. He's never actually done
I don't know if he's done a shamrock, no. I don't know if he's done a shamrock or he's probably done a bishop or two. He's done so much work, it's hard to kind of pin them down.
Banksy, if you're listening, we have a suggestion for you. Look, I'm going to keep the name that has been published by Reuters under wraps for a moment because I want to put a bit of context on why this, Owen, is such big news.
He is, you see, the most famous visual artist, most famous artist alive today, I would argue. And Banksy is, his art is, as you say, stenciled, it's graffiti, it's out there in the public. Context is vital to what he does. It is immediately intelligible. It's immediately understandable because there is that old axiom, isn't there? Kind of, well, I don't understand it, so it must be art. In Banksy's case, oh, I get that. And it's still art, but it's public art. It is displayed in the gable end of a building. It is, as you say, in the Royal Courts of Justice. And they scrubbed that away very quickly, that art. But then the silhouette is still there. And there's a great photograph, indeed, on Reuters as part of their investigation this week, where there's a gentleman, very well-dressed gentleman, visiting that part of London, which you're probably familiar with, that was listening. And he's photographing the silhouette, the outline of the judge with his gavel hitting the protester. So there's something deathless about Banksy's work, even when they do scrub it. And it comes out of a very popular art form, which is, as you say, graffiti, and in a very punk attitude, which is the stenciling. And then there's the wonderful mystery about Banksy. Who the hell is he, or indeed her?
Or they?
Are they?
Could it be a collective?
There are so many. Neil Buchanan from Art Attack, if some people remember who that is one of the names who has been mentioned as possibly and potentially being Banksy in a great situation as prank. He does children's art on television and he does political art on the walls. It's not Neil Buchanan from Art Attack, or is it?
Is that Neil Buchanan who's really daft with a can of salt?
That's, I think, the very same fella who used to work at Young People's Television. Yeah, that's the same fella.
Oh, I think I'd be a bit disappointed if it was him. Anyhow.
But that's the thing. It could be anybody. And he's taking on the art establishment. It could be me. Well, okay, confession, it's not. But he takes on the art establishment and yet he becomes owned by the art establishment. Because as you say, the works sell for millions. He was selling prints for £100 and he'd do pop-up shops at Christmas called Santa's Ghetto. A great man for the puns. He'd write little autobiographies. Biographical tracks or little kind of manifestos or fanzines and call them existentialism. He's eminently quotable as well. And obviously with Instagram and everything else, he will put out little kind of statements, comments, tacitly verifying that certain graffiti, because of course it's easy to reproduce, it's easy to copy. So he would claim that as an official Banksy. And then people would be taken down, chiseling them off walls, getting, you know, and mad things. And, you know, buildings have been knocked down and walls have been basically transported into museums or sold to a third party. It's madness. Of course, he comes from Bristol as well. It's in London largely, but he is an outsider.
Okay, and you say he comes from Bristol, but of course it's never been verified because we don't know who this individual is and he's never going to confirm that. But the reason that we say Bristol is because that's where the artwork was first spotted. That's where we first see him with his spray can.
Spray can, exactly. And that's where he was, a kind of, by his own admission, a fairly average graffiti artist. And it comes out of that kind of that punk, that kind of New York hip-hop. And then trip hop, they don't like calling it trip hop, you know, Massive Attack, etc., and Nelly Hooper and all those great, that great kind of early 90s wave of inspired music that came out of Bristol and could only come out of kind of the melting pot of Bristol. And Bristol's a very curious place. Most recently in 2020, it's only a few years ago, they were tipping the legendary slaver statue, let's call it that, of Edward Colston into the water, into the harbour. And at Colston Hall, anyone who grew up reading kind of gig listings in the NME and stuff would see Bristol, Colston Hall. That's where your favourite bands were playing. So half of Bristol was funded by the slave trade. And yet, I don't know if you ever spent time in Bristol or with Bristolians. You know, typically you might encounter them in numbers and en masse, as I did, at Glastonbury, which is only down the road. And if you spend an evening around a campfire with Bristolians, you kind of see what makes them a bit different, no more than Manchester. And they have their own identity, but it is one funneled through immigration. And it's probably the place in the 1830s where the first, I think, voter rights riots happened in the UK, and you follow that trajectory all the way up to the 2020s, and they're tipping statues of Edward Colston into the harbour. It's that sort of rebellious kind of place, and it did have a great counterculture scene, great music scene. And one of the people that it was famously, not Neil Buchanan from Heart Attack, thought to be Banksy, because I think it was Goldie, the producer and music artist, was being interviewed, and he said Rob. He let the name Rob slip, and everyone then immediately thought it's your man from Massive Attack, previously known as 3D, which was, of course, its graffiti handle, Robert Del Naja. But it's not, according to Reuters. Although he was in Ukraine with Banksy, which is where one of his more celebrated recent art exhibits, shall we call that, 7 Banksy originals were seen in war-devastated Ukraine.
The themes that he explores, fascism, war, immigration, consumerism, yes, the art world itself, they do provoke you into questioning your own values, don't they?
They do. When you stick your neck out or stick your head up above the proverbial parapet there, and you make those kind of claims about commercialism and about consumerism and, let's face it, capitalism, and then you're also involved in the art scene where you're making all this money, that could be kind of become self-reflexive. You're allowed to use those tools to interrogate Banksy and his ilk. But yeah, there's some brilliant stuff. I mean, one of the ones that always kind of chills me is a well-known supermarket chain in the United Kingdom, and indeed here, there is a bag hoisted on a flagpole, and three children, well, one young fellow kind of running it up the flagpole, the bag fluttering in the wind, and the other two children saluting it. It's such a wonderful, he's brilliant use of not only animals, but also children, the innocence of children in his artwork. And as I said, the Robin Hood, he gives a lot of money to good causes. It's been estimated, it's not verifiable, strictly speaking, because again, we don't necessarily know who he is or indeed where the money's coming from, who's paying and signing the checks. But about £30 million has been, you know, estimated with good reason and good maths to have been contributed to decent causes. And the immigration debate in Britain at the moment is something that's very much close to his heart. He has funded an ex-French naval vessel to rescue migrants. You can't put a number on how many bodies they pulled out of the Mediterranean Sea. And you can't fault that. And I think that goes some way to kind of answering the question as well as to why people don't want or have protected his identity. Because I'm sure it's an open secret amongst many, many people. And it also helps, by the way, his anonymity only increases the value if you have a Banksy, Kira, hanging in your downstairs toilet. You know, the more he does in Ukraine, the bigger the value. So this news this week from Reuters may harm those prices. And also, you know, as I've heard people interview people who worked with him before, and one of them said, look, he's doing solidly positive work for people suffering in the Mediterranean. Why would I ever give away his identity? Why would I harm that? You can't argue with that.
And I'm going to come to that in a moment, but I want to talk about one of his biggest stunts, and surely one of the most viral art moments ever, which was the famous shredding stunt with Girl with Balloon at auction.
Yes.
Right. And that, I think, really was his commentary on the pomposity of the art world and his difficulty and, I think, his criticism that art has really become the preserve of the rich. Tell us about that and whether or not you think stunts like that kind of jumped the shark.
Yeah, you see, yeah, I think I'm a Banksy apologist. And this is the japery. This is kind of the situation. This is the humour and I suppose just the boldness of him. Love is in the bin, which is what I really love with what happened here. What's amazing is this happened in, I think, 2018 when they sold the print. It's quite a large frame, quite a gilded frame, and it's quite a deep frame. And Sotheby's, as soon as the gavel came down, it was £1.04 million or whatever. As soon as the gavel came down, this bleeping, like a truck reversing noise, if you watch the video, is amazing. And who shot the video? Only Banksy himself, because he's this mysterious character with, I believe, glasses with the camera fitted to it, standing, blocking, and obscuring people's view of it because he'd be perfect. Because he, 12 years, Kira, 12 years he'd been waiting to do this. As soon as it was sold, he obviously pressed a button, one would imagine. He had rehearsed it. He's on record, as soon as, or as much as we know it's him, he's on record as saying it had worked perfectly in rehearsal. But what happened was it didn't work. Two-thirds of the way down, the shredding, the pictures dropping out the base of the frame, two-thirds of the way down, it stops, so people have to take it away. And then what happens? 3 years later, it sold for £18 million. That is the commentary, but it's a circle commentary. Look, the art world needs Banksy, and Banksy, in a way, needs the art world. Another great quote of his was, I was using art to kind of sell dissent, but now apparently I'm using dissent to sell art. And that's really what he's doing, you know?
There's a great clip of the director of Sotheby's after he's watching this.
Yeah, priceless. Well, not priceless, but a million pounds.
Being shredded,
yeah.
And he just says, I think we've just been Banksy'd.
Yeah, that's right. That's
which is
right.
What has happened. Phenomenal. Right. I mean, part of his legend was built through pop culture. Mm. And I remember this documentary, Exit Through the Gift Shop. It's one of the best documentaries I have ever watched. I highly recommend it if you have no plans this St. Patrick's Day. Root it out. It was massive culturally. How important was that film in shaping, and how important was pop culture in shaping the mythology around him?
I think it's really interesting because it's timely as well, because that was nominated for an Oscar back in 2010, or his film came out in 2010, maybe in 2011 Oscars. And you're right, it's fantastic. The London that Banksy, he moved to was Shoreditch, you know, and Hoxton. These places that couldn't be any hipper now. He wouldn't get near it now. But that's where the artists were going. You know, no more than Berlin, New York, whatever, in the 70s, 90s, when it was affordable. It's not affordable now. And one of the reasons it's not affordable now is because of people like Banksy. So, you know, it becomes this snowball effect, to go back to kind of, you know, being Banksy'd in Sotheby's. It's a story of the early 20th century. It's a story of London as well. And he's trying to pull the mick out of these people. But really, is he part of the problem? And I remember at the time as well, there was this great Chris Morris, the great satirist, and Charlie Brooker, going on to Black Mirror and everything else, who was writing The Guardian at the time, was kind of getting into it. They had this cult show called Nathan Barley, which was all about kind of content creators and kind of creators before they were really that. Again, it was set in that sort of unself-aware East End that was becoming immensely gentrified, and Banksy was a huge fan of Chris Morris. Then he was kind of, he had the mickey pulled out of him with this, and I believe he wasn't very happy about it. That's got to hurt. No more than kind of, I always think, Ross O'Carroll Kelly, like, to bring it back home to Ireland, Ross O'Carroll Kelly was satirising South County Dublin, but who was reading the books? Only South County Dublin, you know? But yeah, definitely a cultural moment, and I think very much the early, the first decade of this century, and then on into the 2010s, yeah. And so if he did jump the shark, look, he's getting on. Like, I believe he was born in 1973. The man's in his mid-50s, you know, and who knows how much money he has. Where does he go from here? I don't know. Have Reuters harmed his value? Quite possibly.
So the Reuters investigation,
yes,
points the finger firmly at a man called Robin Gunningham, about whom, in fairness, there have been rumours.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Why are they pointing the finger at him?
And you see, this is it. I read the investigation, and I encourage anyone, it's on the Reuters.com website, to read in their own words. And it's very well laid out, and Reuters obviously know what they're doing. They started off with Ukraine, and Robert Del Naja, I believe the aforementioned 3D from Massive Attack, was with them. They filmed it. They were there with an NGO Banksy's work has subsequently made a lot of money for. They had some photographs of them taken from behind. So that was the start of it. They basically went to Ukraine with the photographs of Robert Del Naja 3D from Massive Attack, a few other people, including our man, Joe Gunningham, and asked some of the locals if they recognised any of these people. They then went all the way back to trace them back to New York in the 90s and the early noughts, literally 2000, I think it was September 2000, when during New York Fashion Week he was arrested for tampering with a billboard ad. So he took it upon himself to engage with that, got done by the cops for messing with a commercial billboard, and a handwritten confession was signed by Robin Gunningham. They just pieced all these things together then. Because one of the great things about Massive Attack, actually, I think that's always worth mentioning, there was a journalist who had looked at Banksy murals as they popped up in one year, and then they cross-referenced them. They almost like with tracing paper laid it over a map of they didn't do it this way, but that's why I would like to imagine it, a map of Massive Attack tour dates, and they were like, oh, 3D was there, and then a Banksy turned up. It must be him. That must be the Rob, the trick he was talking about. Anyway, Reuters went through everything diligently. They had the photographs of this Jamaican photographer took. He's now since dead. They went back to Steve Lazzarides, his Instagram feed. They poured over all this stuff, including, he was a photographer as well. He's a great photograph, one in particular, of Banksy reading or holding up a book, which is How to Graffiti and Get Away with It. But you can see his hairline, you can see his hair, you can also see the watch on his arm and his left arm and all this stuff cross-referenced. It was a lot of noodling, a lot of kind of sifting through the, not quite people's bins, but perhaps their social media clutter, and, you know, joylessly then deciding that they wanted to tell us who Banksy was. We didn't need to know this. We don't need to know it now. They argued it was strongly in the public interest to reveal who Banksy is. I don't know. I think I'm a romantic.
I'm with you on this.
You know, I don't know that it is in the public interest. To go back to you know, the fact that he was funding good causes and did great work for Sight Savers, for example. Obviously a soft spot for kids, soft spot for the joke being that kind of the kids couldn't see his work. That was the dismissive, you know, kind of cynical media attitude. But great work, as I said, in Ukraine. And also he opened a hotel, which is reopened now after the war in Gaza, in Bethlehem in the West Bank. So I don't know that it isn't a public. I don't think we need to know who Banksy is. I think it takes away the whole romance, the whole mystery.
And I have a bit of a difficulty too, I have to say.
Go on.
Because this is an individual who didn't want his identity revealed. What about his own right to privacy? I mean, there is this twist in the story that he changed his name to David Jones at some point, one of the most common names in Britain, which would allow him, I suppose, to travel very freely with anybody, connecting the dots.
To the Ukraine.
to Ukraine, exactly. Yeah. So I just have a difficulty with that, where a person has said very clearly, I don't want my identity known. I don't feel it is necessary. And you say, actually, it's not necessary. And is there a fear now that the critique that we got from him, the social commentary we got from him, that was nearly enabled because he could be fairly fearless because of his anonymity?
Agreed. And one would think if you're commenting on, say, the more violent and the more racist elements, and we know how virulent things can get in terms of political discourse, particularly now in terms of immigration and race and gender and everything else and sexuality in the UK, but particularly race, you know, what we've seen over the last year or two, that, yeah, he could put himself in danger because of certain depictions and certain comments he has made that may not be some people's taste. Now, obviously, I imagine the statute of limitations on graffitiing on public buildings things may have run out. So, you know, he doesn't have to fear being collared by the Met, shall we say.
Mystery also has a value.
Yeah, it does. Oh no, it absolutely materially harms the value of his work. Absolutely. I would totally agree with that. I mean, the Reuters themselves, they're a very grand kind of paragraph, but I'll just quote a line of it here. The public has a deep interest in understanding the identity and career of a figure with its profound and enduring influence on culture, the art industry, and I think that's the key bit, the art industry, and international political discourse. Now, you know, that's a bit grand, international political discourse. But anyway, the people and institutions who seek to shape social and political discourse are subject to scrutiny, accountability, and sometimes unmasking. Banksy's anonymity has enabled him to operate without such transparency. So that's Reuters' grand statement at the outset. I would take issue with that. Look, they have gone through it rigorously. There is an interview one of the reporters from BBC Radio 4 had done that came up last year, I think, in a BBC podcast, which was fascinating, where he, like any reporter, you know, just before the interview starts, it's, you know, because he doesn't call him Banksy. He wasn't known as Banksy then when this guy was a young artist. He goes, it's Robert Banks, and your man goes, yeah, Robbie Banks, he says, you know, as in Robin Banks. That, you know, it's a childish joke, but we'd all laugh. That was kind of, and that's where Banksy came from. It was kind of a nom de guerre. But as you say, David Jones is now his legal name. His manager, Steve Lazaridis, who was kind of his right-hand man for much of this and probably monetized Banksy better than Banksy could have done himself, and has done very well out of it, including, as Reuters pointed, selling a whole load of burner phones with no data on it whatsoever that he used to contact Banksy for a five-figure sum. So fair play. Lazaridis knows what he's at, but he said one of his last acts, they haven't been an item professionally for the best part of two decades, I believe, but one of the last things he did was to officially change Banksy's name from Robin Gunningham to David Jones. So if it's David Jones, you know, same name as everyone's mom's favourite monkey, and, you know, David Bowie before he became David Bowie, and now apparently Banksy. Fair play to him. I don't know that we do know who Banksy is, because finding David Jones is probably more difficult than finding a needle in a haystack.
And he's never going to confirm it. What do you think his legacy is going to be?
His legacy right now is saved lives. It is children who can see, all because gullible people, as he might see them, went along and bought prints that at one point, going back to the early days, he had no idea how, there was no stock control. He had no idea how many were being sold. So that, I think, is probably the legacy that's closest to his heart. I think he shook up the art establishment, but I think the art establishment, no more than the bookies, they never lose out. Someone will always make money off of art because they'll always say that is art. I think a little bit of energy, the youth of today, shall we say that, the millennials, in terms of political engagement, political protest, perhaps a little bit of stenciling. Although I know there's a bit of kickback from graffiti people, because the graffiti community, because they're like, oh, we can't do it. Banksy's are all put buying glass. So there's a little bit of that. But I know, I think his legacy will be what he did with his money, to be quite honest with you. In terms of art, that's for other people to judge.
Good old-fashioned journalism. All right. Owen Sweeney, thanks so much for being here on News Talk Daily. And I do recommend to everyone listening to have a read of that Reuters investigation. You will need a spare hour. You might need a cup of coffee, but it is worth the time. That's it from News Talk Daily for today. It's been great having your company. Don't forget to hit that like or follow button on your platform of choice. It really helps us here. For now, from me, Ciara Doherty, Flann Lough.